Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, March 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, honoring founder Jim Cusack, continuing his work for over four decades and four generations, helping the chemically dependent and their families battle addiction, villaveritas.org. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. Azam Hussein of New York Oncology Hematology. He is here to answer your questions about cancers of the blood. If you have a question, give us a call right now and get in line early. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Medical Monday, right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today for Medical Monday is Dr. Azam Hussein of New York Oncology Hematology. Dr. Hussein is a board-certified, fellowship-trained hematologist treating cancers of the blood at New York Oncology Hematology. Dr. Hussein also performs stem cell transplant as part of his practice. Dr. Hussein's undergraduate studies were in medicine and surgery in Pakistan. He completed his residency at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine at Bronx Lebanon Hospital in New York. Dr. Hussein focuses on advances in treating both leukemia and myeloma, which are both blood cancers. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Hussein, welcome to the show. Hello. Welcome.
Hello. Welcome.
Nice to have you. Nice to have you here on the program. Well, it says in your CV that you focus on advances in treating both leukemia and myeloma. What is, since you went to medical school and you have been now in practice, where are we going? What is the state of the art in treating leukemia today?
Much important in the leukemia nowadays is that what are the gene mutations and the chromosomes in the cancer cell look like? Used to be a single disease like in 30, 40 years ago, but it's a diverse spectrum now. There is a lot of changing in the treatment options based on these genes and chromosome information in the cancer cell, in the leukemia cells. And based on that, we are modifying the treatment paradigm, and a lot of options have been changed. A lot of targeted therapies have come up because of these new mutations we have found in the cancer cells. Like, standard of care for a young fit patient was a chemotherapy for since 1980s, which has been changed since 2017 now because of the new discovery of the drugs. And since 2017, we have four or five new approvals for leukemia in the
Let me try to understand here. You say that the disease itself is changing, or your understanding of the disease?
We are understanding it better. The disease is same, but we are understanding the molecular levels, or which is very minute level details of the disease, and we are understanding better that how to treat it appropriately.
What is the science that has allowed you to see it better, so to speak?
It's just more advancement in the technology and diagnosing more at the minor gene levels, that what are the pathways at the very cellular level. Cell is the basic structure of our body. That what are the pathways at the cellular level which are driving the cancer. So advancement in the technology made us to reveal those pathways which are driving the cancer. And now we are appropriately hitting that pathways to stop the cancer spread or growth.
We are joined today on this Medical Monday by Dr. Azam Hussein of New York Oncology Hematology. He is a board-certified hematologist, and we're talking specifically at this moment about leukemia. Years ago, I would assume that chemo was the primary, primary way that you fought this. Has that now been changing?
Yes, it has been changing significantly, especially in older and elderly population, because it's a disease more common in elderly population, and there was not much treatment options few years ago. But now in the recent few years, there are a lot of treatment options came up for the older individuals with good success results. For younger individual, it's still the mainstay of the treatment is chemotherapy and followed by transplant or not transplant.
You know, Alex Trebek, the game show host, famously has pancreatic cancer. And he said recently, you know, I tell my friends, I don't know if the cancer is going to get me or the chemo. What is it about chemo that is such a almost dreaded thing for patients? What is so bad about it?
So the chemo, the acute effect, like early effects are the chemo, it's on side effects, but some of the chemos have a late toxicities, which include they can increase the risk of blood cancers, and which can be a myelodysplastic syndrome, which in a, people in a common say a precursor lesion to acute leukemia. And the chemo can cause acute leukemia too, and it's all, they are called therapy-related neoplasm. On an average time span between the chemotherapy exposure and the development of this blood cancers is usually around 5 to 7 years.
Mm-hmm. We're joined today by Dr. Azam Hussain of New York Oncology Hematology. If you have a question, the number is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go over to Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim.
Do you frequently see plasmacytomas as skin lesions, and are they connected with allergies?
Thank you, Matamoros. A good question. Plasmacytomas can happen in the bone or outside of the bone. Extramedullary plasmacytomas can happen anywhere. So they can be seen on the skin, but not a common one. I am not positive about if they are related to allergy, because they're usually due to a gene mutation, and this is as cancerous growth. So,
all right, Jim, thank you very much for the call. The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Since you were in medical school, doctor, has the fundamental understanding of what cancer is and why it is changed?
I think it is changing overall. Previously, we used to base cancer as anatomical lesion, like cancer of the breast, cancer of the stomach. But overall, the cancer pathophysiology is changing, and it is going towards what gene is in the cancer. It doesn't matter, like if you have a gastric cancer, what gene you have, so we can target it. It's the same thing with the breast cancer. What gene you have, do we can target that? Because so it's more moving towards away from like a anatomical cancer to a genetic cancer, like where we know like more about the cancer biology and each cancer in detail, that how can we target the gene, and that has shown us a better outcomes than some of the cancer with traditional chemos.
You also do stem cell transplant as part of your practice. Mm-hmm. And regarding stem cell and also regarding genetic therapies, there is almost a taboo at a certain level. You hit a certain level of research and a government or society will say, hold the phone, let's stop there. Is there enough science being done on this?
I think we have a great success with both autologous and allogenic stem cell transplant already. Actually, the more is coming on the gene therapy, and this has been successful. We have gene therapy approved for hemophilia now. So this is more, this is going to be the growing field, and the gene therapies are coming in the, especially cancer, which are in the treatment for the hereditary diseases like sickle cell or thalassemia. So they're important for those. And then the gene therapy is for other diseases, non-cancerous diseases. The same thing with the transplant. We have been more success in, we're doing the transplant for so many years, but we're understanding more biology of the transplant, post-transplant, stem cell transplant. The transplant complications, we are better understanding them. We have devised new drugs to deal with the complications. We have better control at how to give the medication before and after. we have better donor availability, so there are better outcomes nowadays.
Well, I'm very interested in finding out more about stem cells, and we'll talk about that and some of the controversial aspects of that. We are joined today by Dr. Azam Hussein of New York Oncology Hematology. And, of course, we'll get to the calls. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We are joined today by Dr. Azam Hussein of New York Oncology Hematology. And let's grab a call here. And then I want a 101 level education on what stem cell therapy is and what it does and what it doesn't do and some of the drawbacks and some of the positives. But let's go right now to Jim in Wappingers Falls. Jim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Okay. I have two questions for the doctor. First of all, my brother has multiple myeloma, and I was just curious whether if there's been any advancements in the last 3 years. He had to go through the whole chemo and the radiation after having his stem cells pulled from his body. And the second question has to do with he's still in a considerable amount of pain, even though the multiple myeloma has been arrested. So I'm curious, is there anything that he can do to help reduce that pain? It's really a bothersome sort of thing for him.
Thank you, Jim. Multiple myeloma is a very treatable disease right now. It almost has 13 to 15 drugs. You can give over 40 combinations. So I am, and your brother look like has a transplant, and radiation is mainly used for palliative, for pain control. So I believe he can follow with his physician that what treatment level he's on. There are multiple combinations available. Recently, a combination got approved last week for a relapse or refractory multiple myeloma, and there are a lot of new drugs. There is a therapy called a CAR-T therapy in which we take the immune cells of the patient and make them small robots and then infuse back, and then they go and kill in the cancer cells. And that has shown a great success in multiple myeloma. Even people who have transplant, who have 5 lines of therapy, they have shown 80 to 85% response rate. So they are not available commercially. They are available in the clinical trials right now. But your brother can consult at a higher institute for that option if he's refractory to chemotherapy.
Again, what is it called again? What's the name of that again?
It's called CAR, like C-A-R, T cells, CAR T cells.
And
all right.
CAR T cells, okay. And the pain, the pain that he's sort of in, he's in constant sort of achingness. If that's possible, is there anything he can do for that in terms of just, I don't know, medication, I guess, or I guess if he gets
depends on the pain is due to the cancer or pain is due to the treatments, because sometimes the cancer can cause neuropathy, the treatment itself can cause neuropathy. If it's a neuropathic pain, the treatment medication are slightly different from a bone pains, and so I think it's a better understanding of the patient and discussion with him what type of pain it is and then managing according to it.
Jim, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Dr. Azam Hussein today of New York Oncology Hematology. And a couple things from that last call. I'll go with a more conventional question first. What is it about radiation that can be used in a palliative sense? In other words, how can it reduce pain? I never heard this before.
Because the radiation is a treatment for a localized area. When you give the treatment, like if a myeloma has a big bone lesion or a myeloma has a bone lesion outside of the bone or outside of the bones and it's causing pain, and the best treatment is chemotherapy, but to buy time, you can use the radiation to decrease the size of the lesion, because the radiation is destructive. Wherever you give It's going to kill those cells. So that you kill the active cancer there to just patient help with the pain, but it's going to help with the only local area. It's not going to help the disease overall in the body. So that is where you need chemotherapy. So the radiation is not a definite treatment unless you have a single site plasmacytoma, not for a multiple myeloma.
All right. Now, the other part of this, and it really caught my attention, what is this about little tiny robots?
So that's a new therapy. It's called CAR-T, chimeric antigen receptor T cells. And what we do is take the small lymphocytes, which are the immune cells in our body, take out of your body, and then we genetically modify them and put a super like a vector on it so it can recognize the cancer cell. They are immune cells. So we make them modify them, and then we infuse them back again. And then they go inside the patient, and then they recognize the cancer cells and kill those cells.
To me, this is amazing. When did this start?
This has been in clinical trials for 3-4 years now, or more than that. Actually, it's almost 6-7 years. And it got approved for ALL in children, acute lymphoblastic leukemia, till the age of 26. And it has been already approved by the FDA for the relapse lymphoma after transplant or after 2 lines of chemotherapy. But it has not been approved for myeloma. But based on the current results, what we're seeing, we anticipate the next disease for which this therapy will be improved is myeloma because of the excellent results.
So you're optimistic about the chances in the future. The number here is 800-348-2551. Lauren and Troy will be next in a moment. But if you could, before the next call, just briefly tell us what stem cell is, how it works, and then we'll get into why some people are against it.
So the stem cells are we're talking about the bone marrow stem cells. So they are the mother cells in the bone marrow. They can redivide on their own. They're not dependent on anything. So they are self-regenerating. So from there, all of our blood cells are produced, which include the cells which help to fight against immunity, our red blood cells which carry oxygen, our platelets which stop bleeding. So all these blood cells are produced from our stem cells. So what is the principle here is because most of the cancer, like myeloma, is a cancer just down the line from the mother cells. So what we do is give them a chemotherapy and kill the cancer clone. But deep inside our heart, we know that there are some of the cells left over in the bone marrow, even we just say they are in remission. Then what we do is give them a when we make sure that they are in appropriate numbers, so we move their mother cells from the bone marrow into the blood. And we collect them from the blood by attaching the patient to the machine. And when we store those stem cells, which can be stored up to 10 years. And then we give them a strong chemo to kill all of the cells in the body. Mainly our aim is to kill the cancer cells. And once we do that, then we infuse the same stem cells back into the body. And these stem cells are smart. We just infuse in your vein, and they know they're homing. They go in the body, and they go sit in the bone marrow, and they start producing normal blood again.
And has this been successful?
It has been very successful for myeloma. This is the one treatment which has so far given you the best freedom-free survival from the cancer. On an average, people get 5 to 6 years free from cancer after getting the transplant.
You had mentioned side effects. What are the does it hurt? What are the side effects?
The main side effects are the side effects of chemotherapy, which are mainly fatigue, tiredness, and then the hair can fall. The main other thing is that chemotherapy suppresses your immune system. So we are at very risk of infections in the community, which normal people are not, and which can be some of the infections can be high risk. So we need to be careful when we are getting the chemotherapy to avoid contact with sick people. Then there are other milder side effects, mouth sores, nausea, vomiting. but they usually get better after a few days. But in the bigger run, it has benefits.
Our guest today is Dr. Azam Hussein of New York Oncology Hematology. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Lauren is in Troy. Hello, Lauren.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I am asking the doctor, please, if he might explain how a concentrated dose or an increased dose of folinic acid could lessen the effects of nausea with chemotherapy such as methotrexate.
Thank you, Lauren. Really good question. Methotrexate is basically used to treat acute lymphoblastic leukemia and the lymphomas. So the basic principle is the way the methotrexate works is inhibit certain enzymes in the body, which helps important in the growth of the cells, our normal cells and cancer cells. So we want to be selective, but we cannot be 100% selective with chemotherapy. In doing that, the chemotherapy also affects your normal cells, which are in your mouth, in your food pipe, and in your stomach. And so you can get damage there, mouth sores. You can have difficulty swallowing. You can have nausea.
Yes.
Your stomach gets irritated. So leucovorin is a
nausea.
Yeah, rescue drug.
Excuse me.
Sorry. Go ahead, Lauren.
I'm sorry. I said extreme nausea.
Extreme nausea.
So leucovorin is a medication which helps to reverse the effect of methotrexate, and it can be used to prevent the systemic side effects of methotrexate. We commonly use when we give this chemo in the hospital because it ensures the cell viability, survival, and early regeneration in sites other than the cancer cells.
Lauren, thank you very much for the call. We are joined today by Dr. Azam Hussein of New York Oncology Hematology, and our number is 800-348-2551. Before we go to our next call, back to stem cells for a moment. A political hot button for at least 20 years now is fetal stem cells. Why would a fetal stem cell be more useful to you than one from an adult, let's say?
I'm not sure which disease we are talking about. In adult diseases for leukemia, we use the fetal stem cell as a last resort. Our first try is to find a donor from international registry, which is a fully matched donor, and that is the best donor. And then the first of all is the sibling match, and then after that is a match from international registry. And the third one is a newly technique called haploidentical that all the parents can get from their kids because they are half match, and the kids can get from their parents because they are half match, and that has shown successful results. And the last resort is when we do not find anybody match from international registry or a slight mismatch, then we do a cord blood stem cell transplant. And that is the only problem with the cord blood transplant is that for a 60-year-old man, we are giving a boy who just came to the world 1 day old or a 1 hour old. So he has not seen any infection. His blood has not seen anything in the world. So that has associated with taking a long time to recovery of the bone marrow and a high risk for infections because this kid is new in the... And this gentleman who got the stem cell from a 1 day or 1 hour old kid.
Now, is this ethical in your estimation?
I think it's ethical because if we don't do that, the gentleman, his disease is significant enough. That's why we're doing it and taking this risk.
What about the 1 day old or 1 hour old?
So we take the consent from the parents, and they take their consent. It's that you take the blood and store it. And then we can use it later on.
Our guest today is Dr. Azam Hussein of New York Oncology Hematology. It's a Medical Monday if you haven't been able to figure that out. It's 800-348-2551 if you have a question. Bob in Springfield, Mass. Bob, you're on.
Yeah. Are there any treatment for mantle cell lymphoma?
Thanks, Bob. Good question. Mantle cell lymphoma is a lymphoma, which we call as intermediate. It can be a slow growing, or some people have a fast growing. It's a very treatable entity with good outcomes. This is the only lymphoma in which we do chemotherapy. And if the patient is young, and they can go for a transplant upfront, but if the patient is older, especially older than 65 or 60, then we usually do chemotherapy with good outcomes. Again, there is a, if the, and then there are other treatment options in addition to chemotherapy, which are approved in the second line, and they are oral tablets with very good outcomes. And then even after those, there are other treatment options available.
How about stem cells?
Stem cell is used for the young patient less than 60-year-old, and it has shown benefit. We use it upfront with the chemotherapy. And
I have mantle cell. I had chemo already.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my doctors says he doesn't want to do the stem cells. The other one agrees. So I'm going to see where I stand.
It depends on a lot of things, that how is your lungs, heart, your performance status, and those things are doing, that your doctors can follow. And if you're healthy and good enough, they can proceed with the transplant. But above the age of 60, the role is less clear.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call. Well, doctor, I mean, you consider young patients under age 60? This is great. This is great news. I'm a scamp. I'm a young kid at this rate. I feel really good about that. Let's go to Robert in Statsburg. Robert, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. I appreciate your show. Usually in these kinds of conversations, people call in and say, what's the role of diet? And then the doctor says, oh, no, whatever you eat, the foods you eat every day of your life has nothing to do at all with cancer. But did you Google diet and cancer, or diet and colon cancer, diet and any cancer? You'll see the internet's got plenty of scientific studies showing.
Hey, Robert, he didn't say that. He didn't say any of those things, Robert. Give him a chance, man. Give him a chance.
And then the nutrients. People can have access to all kinds of nutrients. Can we talk about the role of nutrients that's deeply scientifically studied for decades, and let's not say, oh, no, there's nothing out there, because it's ridiculous.
Well, there you go again.
And I've heard it.
Just state the...
Okay, I've heard it on your show a lot of times.
All right, Robert, thank you. Let's talk about nutrients. That was all you had to say there, Robert. Go ahead there, Doc.
Did you do any homework before you started this interview?
Yes, I have a medical degree that I got before the show. Thank you. Go ahead. Let's talk about nutrients.
So nutrients has a role, and definitely you are right. There are studies which has shown, especially ketogenic diet in head and neck cancer. There have been ongoing trials with that. And then there are other diets, especially you're right, in colon cancer, increased fiber diet helps to prevent that and those things. But there is a little role actually related to the blood cancer, which are we talking about. So generally eating healthy and eating good is the key here. Actually, with our transplant patient, we try to avoid some fresh fruits and vegetables for some time. But that's a separate issue because of their decreased immunity. But definitely, I don't disagree with that. But again...
I think Robert was maybe leading toward, in his own very artful and tactful way, was leading toward possibly some curative effects of eating certain things. Have you learned anything about that?
Not on a bigger scale. We have seen any effect from any of the foods. Honestly, it's tough to do that type of studies, that one person don't eat a food for a long time and other people do for a long time. There was a trial for the Mediterranean food, but that was mainly for the heart disease and those things.
Yeah.
So
have you consulted Robert in Statsburg about anything like this?
No.
Now let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Do me a favor if you're calling in. Don't get irritated with our guest if they haven't discussed your question yet. If he doesn't answer your question, feel free to be irritated. Otherwise, wait for it. We'll be back. ¶¶ Welcome back to Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Azam Hussain of New York Oncology Hematology. And Dr. Hussain focuses on treating both leukemia and myeloma, but any kind of blood-related cancers, you give us a shout, 800-348-2551. Again, don't yell at the guest until after he talks to you. Cynthia in Newburgh. Cynthia, you're on.
Yes, I would like to know what the difference between multiple myeloma and amyloidosis is.
Very good question, Cynthia. So multiple myeloma is a cancer of plasma cells in the bone marrow, which secrete the proteins called antibodies, which help us provide us immunity. So these proteins can come in the blood and can deposit in the kidney or in the other organs of the body. So when they get deposited in the kidney or in the heart, they can cause a problem which is called amyloidosis. But amyloidosis is strongly associated with multiple myeloma if you have the abnormal protein. But it is associated with other things too, like chronic inflammation. People who have lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, they can have amyloidosis. Then there is another type of amyloidosis called transthyretin, in which there is a different type of protein. And then it's just age-related amyloidosis too. So, and generally in community, when we talk about amyloidosis, most of the cases are associated with multiple myeloma. But there are other types of amyloidosis which are not associated with multiple myeloma.
Hello?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Number here is 800-348-2551. It's a Medical Monday, 1-800-348-2551. What is the death rate for leukemia these days?
So this is the most common cause of mortality in the adult leukemia. So it depends on the your genes and chromosome, but an overall survival at the 2 years is 40 to 50%.
And how has that changed since you were in medical school?
So it's changed with this, like the treatment for older individuals, which we used to have for people above 65, used to work in only 20% cases. With the new treatment, it has changed to improvement to about 50 to 60% mm-hmm. response rate. And the people are living, median survival of the people was 4 to 5 months, and which is improved to 18 to 24 months.
Do you see a day when it's 10 years or maybe longer?
We are hopeful for that, and there are a lot of trials, especially with the advent of our learning that the way to treat the cancer has been changed. It's not traditional chemo. It's more targeted therapy and making your immune system strong to kill the cancer cells, immune therapy, and that has given us a big breakthrough in every field of the cancer. So we are hopeful that since, again, I mentioned it earlier, since 2017, we have 5 new drugs for leukemia after 1980. So you can see after 37 years, in 2 years, we have made a big success. So we are anticipating a lot more advancement in the next upcoming years.
Dr. Azam Hussain of New York Oncology Hematology joins us on this Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551. Sean is in Pleasant Valley. Hi, Sean, you're on.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Good, nice to have you.
When my daughter was born, we actually had her stem cells harvested, mm-hmm. and they've been in, it's actually for the last, going on 20 years.
Yeah, your cell phone is a little in and out. You said you harvested your daughter's stem cells, and they have been essentially on ice for 20 years now?
Correct. And is it worth it for us to keep, keep them in cryos, you know, paying to have them every year? How long are they basically viable for?
They're really viable for a good time because they are frozen in liquid nitrogen at minus 180 degree. So this is a topic of another interest, that if you want to keep the stem cell for your kid, that how much is the chance that the kid can use it? Or if you're available for a general person like other whole people, and so that what's the being chance of being used. But again, if you are interested in keeping it, you can pay and they can be viable.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Stem cells essentially alive, and then you freeze them.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do they become viable again when you thaw them out?
Yeah, they are viable because at that temperature, they don't lose their ability. They are mostly, I told that they are self-regenerating cells. Mm. So they keep that capability. And when we thaw them again, they go in the body and they are start working.
And in your experience, it could be an indefinite length of time as long as the temperature holds?
Yeah.
Oh, very amazing. Our number is 800-348-2551. Samantha is in Poughkeepsie. Samantha, you're on.
Hi. About, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, I had three enlarged lymph nodes, one behind my ear and two in the back of my neck. Mm-hmm. I got an ultrasound and an MRI and, you know, like no fatty hilum. They were like perfectly round circles. Mm-hmm. I was basically told they weren't reactive. On top of that, I've lost like maybe 30 pounds accidentally.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of other things. But the doctor said, because they did start to shrink and then eventually disappeared. The doctor said that I shouldn't worry about them and to just kind of move on to, with my life. But now I just found another one in my groin.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Samantha.
Still losing a lot of weight. Now just I'm also having dizzy spells and joint pain, muscle aches. I have an appointment tomorrow, but I don't really know what to think
When we talk about enlarged lymph nodes, the most common cause in our mind comes is the cancer. Actually, that's not true. Most commonly, they enlarge due to infection. And then a lot of inflammatory disorder. People with lupus can have enlarged lymph nodes. There are other diseases, Castleman disease, and any immunological disease can make them enlarge. So if you are losing weight and lymph nodes are coming back and forth, so I think you need a proper evaluation by a doctor to make sure there is no what is going on, if there is an inflammatory disorder or if this is a chronic infection which is going on, so it can be appropriately treated, because the weight loss is concerning to me, which how much you mentioned.
Yeah, I got a full immunological workup and nothing came back. Like the hard, non-tender, non-moving lymph nodes. And I was doing research because, you know, Dr. Google is the worst.
Yes, it is the worst.
Reading some people were saying that there are different lymphomas that, the slow-growing can shrink and come back, and I just didn't know. I just want to arm myself with as much information as possible on the next round of doctor visits I have.
Usually they don't shrink without treatment, but they don't grow fast. You can watch them for years, and they don't give you trouble slow-growing lymphomas.
Okay.
But there can be certain other possibilities. I'm not sure if they have done the scans to make sure there are no lymph nodes in the abdomen or chest or certain or special blood studies to look for any abnormal cells in the blood.
Well, Samantha, thank you very much, and our thoughts are with you, and I hope everything goes okay. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number here on the program. Dr. Azam Hussein is our guest from New York Oncology Hematology. We go over to Gail in Oneonta. Gail.
Yes, if both your elderly parents had one had chronic lymphocytic leukemia, the other one they weren't quite sure where, but it was a blood cancer, what are the chances of siblings getting that?
Well, that's a great question.
Yeah, it's a very good question. Great. For most of the blood cancer, they are sporadic. They just arise on their own. Like myeloma, they have an increased chance of in the siblings about 4 to 5-fold. So that's why they recommend screening for the first-degree siblings. For CLL, you talk about chronic lymphocytic. It's actually a very small percentage. So usually we do not recommend. It's a a leukemia or lymphoma associated with aging. And even if you talk about the worst one, MDS or acute myeloid leukemia, the chances are 4 to 5%, and there are specific genes which have been diagnosed with it. And if they carry that gene, then that has a prone to get in the families. The one is that if somebody is early onset blood cancer, not in the old age, early onset, they are concerning, because then those kids have some genes which are hereditary tendencies and run in the families.
Thank you.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Gail. Number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Azam Hussein is our guest. Brian is on the road to Boston. Brian, you're on.
Thank you very much. I have a pancreatic neuroendocrine cancer, stage 4. And I'm wondering what makes neuroendocrine cancer more treatable?
Thank you, Brian. That's a good question. I do not really specialize in the pancreatic endocrine tumor, so I will recommend you to consult the physician who specializes in this.
Hmm. Okay. Well, thanks, Brian. We appreciate it. Drive safely. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Azam Hussein, our guest today on this Medical Monday. You spoke earlier and throughout the show, actually, about genetic therapies and switching on and switching off genes that do certain things. First of all, how do you know which genes you're switching on and off and what they do? This fascinates me. Give me a 101 level explanation of this.
So for, let's give an example of sickle cell disease, in which you have a gene mutation in which in one of the amino acids is substituted to a different place. And because of that, our hemoglobin is not formed normally. And then we have a sickle hemoglobin, which goes into the blood, sickles, and cause damage in the multiple organs of the body. So we know the gene, the location where the problem is. So what we can do is to change that gene with the lentivector and to put a vector there, and then it can go in those cells in the germline and change that gene so that and put it to the normal template, and that can cause that it's to get better. And same thing with the hemophilia, in which the gene therapy is approved. We put a lentivector, and which carries the gene, and then it goes and infects the cells, and that gene takes the place instead of the abnormal gene and start producing the coagulation protein which the patients are lacking, and then clinical manifestation of the disease are less.
What happens when gene therapy goes wrong?
So that is what the main hindrance to the success is, because if a small minute deviation or small deviation from a little point can give you a different outcome or a different disease which you even don't know. So that is a critical point in the gene therapy.
Go ahead.
And that's why there are technologies to do gene editing, and which is a CRISPR technology and those technologies. So there's a lot of work going on. There is not big success, but anticipating big success in these treatments.
I have heard about CRISPR, and my question is how far it can go. Not today, not tomorrow, but in 10 years. Is it possible we will get to a stage where you can go far enough back up in the genetic tree to stop some of these things that are in fact heredity related? In other words, generations down the road won't have those risks, because you got to the person, say the grandfather, and you manipulated the genes. Now the grandkids are not likely to get cancer X.
It's tough to manipulate the germline gene, so it's going to be a tough, I think, challenging question. And I think time will tell us the way the advancements are ongoing.
You seem like a rather pragmatic fellow. Are you optimistic at all about the future of, say, curing cancer?
Yes, I'm very optimistic with the way the field is going and the way the field is moving, and we are anticipating great success in the near future.
Of course, I guess the problem is, they say, can you cure cancer? There are so many different types, and mm-hmm. It's not all the same mechanism, right? When you say, I have cancer, it's not the same if you have leukemia or if you have pancreatic cancer or something else. Is it just a mutation issue?
That is what we think, too, that the same, like the breast cancer has the same mutation and the gastric cancer has the same mutation. So the successfully the same drug worked for the breast cancer. It doesn't work so good. It works good for gastric too with the same mutation, but doesn't work so good. So it also is the disease biology and the niche and where the cancer cells are. That also play in the role too.
Mm-hmm. So do we know, how do I put this? Do we know why some bloodlines, some people and some families are more susceptible to cancer than others?
That is what we told, like in the myeloma, there is increased risk 4 to 5-fold in the first degree relatives if the patient, if somebody is diagnosed with myeloma. And definitely there are gene points or locus which we identify that they are more, those people are more prone to get cancer as compared to others as we're learning more and more. Previously, we used to say acute myeloma, leukemia, and MDS, they're not hereditary, they're acquired. But now we identified few genes and few families which have certain genes and they run in the families and causing more prone to cancers.
But you think, if I read you correctly, that environmental factors and other things are more important than heredity in many cases?
In the most of the blood cancers.
What are the main environmental causes, or at least?
Most of the blood cancer, there is no significant, like lung cancer is strongly associated with smoking. We do not have a strong risk factor here, as mainly some of the benzene solvents, they are, some people have reported. Recently, people have talking about a lot about the weed killer has been associated with lymphoma, and there's a lot of discussion on that. So it's mainly those of the chemicals are mostly associated with the blood cancer. Then there was a discussion about not other strong risk factor, and then the people who were exposed in the Twin Towers, they are more in chances of myeloma in those group.
I saved this for the last minute, because I didn't want the whole show to be taken up. Now, chemo and other therapies will suppress immune systems of mm-hmm. patients. We have a possible pandemic mm-hmm. right now. It's not there yet. The World Health Organization hasn't said it's a pandemic yet. But obviously, people are concerned. Now, you have patients who have immune systems that are repressed, suppressed by therapy. Any precautions being taken at New York Oncology Hematology?
We are taking very good precautions. We have a flow sheet mat of the patient who went there, and if they have symptoms, how to tackle them. We are following the CDC guidelines. Administrative chief and our administrative head are very proactive in this, and we have been educating our patients for the proper hygienic care, and most of them are recommended to use masks nowadays, even with the minor chemos, just if they are slightly immunocompromised because of the virus can affect them badly. And then if we have a whole education of our staff that if somebody comes in contact, what to do and how to deal with that. So we have put the paper sheets on every of our doors and what to do if this happens.
Well, Dr. Hussain, thank you for being here. Support comes from Gomez Neurology Albany, a neurologic clinic and infusion center providing care for neuromuscular disorders and headaches, multiple sclerosis, and chronic pain. Patients see a physician at every visit. GomezNeurology.com. Once again, thanks to Dr. Azam Hussain of New York Oncology Hematology for being here. Thank you for calling. Even Robert from Statsburg, thank you all. Thanks to Zach, our engineer. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the big program, Gordon Fricke will be here to answer your automotive repair questions. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.